and the court will proceed to the third case of the day, Sherrer Sidsey v. Gonzalez. Ms. Baldini-Poterman.
May it please the court. My name is Maria Baldini-Poterman, and I represent Otar Sherrer Sidsey. Otar Sherrer Sidsey is a native and citizen of Georgia who went to the U.S. legally on March 31, 1999 as a non-immigrant. In 1999, he was granted asylum after affirmatively applying to the Immigration Naturalization Service.
What was the grounds of that grant of asylum?
The grounds, according to what is in the administrative record, Your Honor, is not clear. A copy of the asylum application was not provided to the Immigration Court or a copy of the decision previously provided by the Immigration
it's a
Service.
A public document. Can't we take judicial notice of it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It's a public document, is it not?
The grant of asylum?
No, the grant of asylum. The government said you can stay. That's an official
yes.
document. Don't give me the surprise look.
Yes, it is an official document, Your Honor.
All right, so we can take judicial notice of it, right?
Yes,
Do you know what the ground is?
I am not aware of what the underlying ground is, other than it was a political opinion claim, Your Honor, and a membership in a particular social group. In July of 2002, Mr. Sherrer Sidsey was arrested and charged with indecent solicitation of a sex act, a Class B misdemeanor that this court has already analyzed in a case called Gannon versus Gonzalez. He pled not guilty and took it to trial. He was sentenced to 18 months of probation, which was successfully completed on April 16th of 2004, after he was convicted. There are three main issues before this court today. The first is whether the board erred in upholding the IJ's decision that Mr. Sherrer Sidsey has been convicted of sexual abuse of a minor, or that he has been convicted of attempted sexual abuse of a minor as an aggravated felony. The second main issue is whether the immigration judge improperly terminated his asylum grant without affording him an evidentiary hearing as required by the statute, the regulations, and published board precedent.
Could I just stop you there, please? Because it seems that the IJ very clearly told the parties, both parties, that the next step would be a decision on removal. And what I'm wondering is, did counsel ask for a hearing at that time?
Your Honor, the transcript reflects that the judge indicated that the parties had 1 week to submit written argument on whether or not Mr. Sherrer Sidsey was deportable, something that Mr. Sherrer Sidsey's prior counsel did comply with. But the record indicates that the judge clearly stated, I will set another hearing to issue a decision regarding deportability. Deportability is different from whether or not the person merits relief. And so it is understandable that prior counsel understood the judge to say, file your memo regarding whether or not this is an aggravated felony, whether or not Mr. Sherrer Sidsey is subject to being removed for the charge of child abuse, and that a ruling would then come forward on whether or not he was deportable. That would be separate from whether or not his asylum status should have been terminated. After the judge made an initial ruling on whether he was deportable as charged, then it should have proceeded to a hearing on whether or not his asylum should be terminated in conjunction with whether or not he should be granted adjustment of status in the exercise of discretion.
See, what I'm trying to figure out is what information he wanted to present at a hearing and what fact questions remain to be answered.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Under the matter of KA, the board outlined very clearly that someone who has been found to be deportable based on an aggravated felony is allowed to have a hearing to present evidence that could include, for example, copies of evidence of the legal status of other family members in the country, employment letters, payment of taxes, testimony, most importantly, testimony of family and friends from the community as to whether or not the person deserves a chance to be granted adjustment of status under 8 U.S.C. 1159B. That is a different adjustment of status provision than the typical adjustment of status provision, which is 1255. So we're talking about two different grounds. The waiver that is also available under 8 U.S.C. 1159 is the broadest possible in the Act. So if Mr. Cherishidze's misdemeanor conviction were even a grounds of inadmissibility for a crime involving moral turpitude, it would fall under the petty offense exception. And if the judge wanted to require a waiver on Form I-602 for under 1159C, the waiver could be granted for humanitarian purposes in the public interest or purposes of family unity.
But let me go back again. It seems to me that his attorney had the opportunity to present whatever claims he wished to make because, again, I reiterate, the IJ told both sides that the next hearing would be an announcement of the ruling, and yet the attorney stood silent. So that's what I'm trying to get past.
Yes, Your Honor. In the supplement to the attorney's motion regarding his eligibility, he did raise that Mr. Cherishidze was eligible for adjustment of status. He also raised the matter of KA as far as termination. Perhaps the attorney should have, within a week's time, turned around and provided the actual application and all the supporting documents. But unfortunately, I believe the attorney understood that the next hearing was going to be just to determine whether or not he was deportable. At the time that this took place, Mr. Cherishidze's adjustment of status application was actually pending before the Immigration Service. It was not pending before the Immigration Court, as the Immigration Service had not yet issued a denial of the adjustment of status application. So it was before another agency. So logically, if Judge Katsavalos had held another hearing, he would have decided whether or not Mr. Cherishidze was deportable and then moved to the next step, which would have been the presentation of evidence regarding why Mr. Cherishidze's asylum grant should not be terminated and why, in the exercise of discretion, he merited adjustment of status. If you look to the case of Matter of Jean, which the Fifth Circuit did address in a case called Jean versus Gonzalez, in that case, the alien had been convicted of what basically was negligent homicide. The alien in that case had a full hearing, had the right to present witnesses, testimony, evidence to demonstrate why they should be granted adjustment of status with a waiver and that they met the higher standards. In this particular case, if you look back to Judge Katsavalos' decision, he noted that he was going to terminate the asylum grant, and he merely noted that, yes, Mr. Cherishidze had entered as a non-immigrant, that he had been granted asylum, but didn't take into account the other limited favorable factors in the record, which would have been, for example, that he had completed his probation without incident, as noted in the certified disposition, which is in the administrative record and was before the court, that he had no other convictions, that he had family members who had also been granted asylum. Basically, if you look at the IJ's decision, it's at Appendix 11 or Administrative Record 89. The judge just briefly discusses it and says that the act, meaning the conviction, renders the respondent subject to termination and precludes asylee status. There are no countervailing factors that militate against termination of asylee status. No factors were presented because no evidentiary hearing was ever held in this case. It was understood from the transcript that it was being set over for a basic ruling on whether or not the person was deportable, and then that after that, relief would be sought. And again, counsel did raise the issue, Matter of KA, in the supplement, which was filed at the end of July 2006, saying that a hearing should be held under Matter of KA to determine the issue of termination of asylee status and adjustment of status. As far as the evidence in the record, we submit to this court that it is not clear from the complaint who the actual victim was.
I think you know. The charging document states that the complainant is Evelyn Aguila for Eric Aguila. What possible meaning could that have unless the child was the intended target of the solicitation? Why would the child be mentioned anywhere if in the charge unless the child was the target? I mean, that's a problem.
Yes, Your Honor, and I understand that. But we submit that it is not clear why the prosecutor would have included that in there because of the language with the same. Does the same refer back to Evelyn Aguila, or does it refer to Eric Aguila? And we would submit that it's not clear. It's ambiguous. But regardless of this, the bottom line here is that Mr. Sharashidze did not get his day in court to present his evidence regarding that his asylum status should not be terminated and that he should be allowed to proceed with an application for adjustment of status before the immigration court.
The strongest argument that this was preserved by the exhaustion and before the BIA.
Before the BIA, Your Honor?
So we have jurisdiction even to consider.
Yes, Your Honor. In the administrative record, in the brief to the board at administrative record page 21, counsel raised that matter of KA applied and that termination was not mandatory where the person was eligible for adjustment of status as an asylee. On administrative record page 22, he also states that he does not concede that he is subject to removal or that he's an aggravated felon and that respondent requests to remand regarding termination of asylum in a hearing. So I would point this court to those two areas as far as the exhaustion issue goes. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Ms. Quinn.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Lee Quinn, and I represent Respondent Alberto Gonzalez in this immigration matter. The petitioner...
Can you perhaps tell me why this gentleman was allowed to stay in the first place? What was the basis of the original?
No, Your Honor, that is not in
you
the
represent
record.
Represent the government, do you not?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
And you're trying to throw this man out of the country. Shouldn't you know why he was asked to stay here?
No, the reasons that he was granted asylum have nothing to do with the power to terminate asylum.
Those are the boundaries of your responsibility to have knowledge about this case, the government's action.
No, Your Honor, and I will be glad to try to find that document
for
you.
Somebody better tell me.
Certainly.
Oh, I might issue.
You may have one of the 10 days, Ms. Quinn, to file such information. Okay.
One of the jurisdictional questions is that we are relegated to the record below, and the record below does not have that, but I will be glad to furnish that for you. The petitioner here was granted asylum, which is a privilege for which many aliens strive, and yet he abused that privilege by offering the mother of a minor child $20 in order to have sex with the child. I think the only real issue before the court here today is whether the board correctly determined, and for which this court has jurisdiction, whether the petitioner was convicted of intending to have sex with a minor. Once the court decides that, I believe the holdings in Gatum and Hernando Alvarez resolve most of the other issues that would be before the court, because under those cases, the court has already held that 8 U.S.C. 1101A43A encompasses convictions under the Illinois statute, Chapter 720, Illinois Compiled Statutes 511-14.1.
But, you know, if you take a look at pages 3 and 4 of the gray brief, the reply brief, the petitioner is arguing that if we accept your arguments, then an IJ could terminate asylee status without ever conducting a testimony hearing in a case. Is that correct? Of course, I would be very concerned about the effect of such a rule on other cases. So,
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that it would be correct. I think there were three hearings in this matter. It was very clear in the briefing before the first hearing that the petitioner did not want to testify on this, and in fact, petitioner's counsel argued that even if he were forced to testify, the testimony could not be considered in terminating the asylum. I think the dichotomy here is between trying to find out exactly what petitioner was convicted of without going back and having to redetermine the facts. And for that reason, this court in both Gatum and Hernando Alvarez has said that where you have a divisible statute like the one that we're dealing with, where it could be equally applied to both adults and child, you may then move to the charging document, which was the complaint in this case. And I think for the reasons Your Honor have already stated, it seems to strain credulity to argue, as petitioner does on page 22 of its brief, that there was no minor involved. It strains credulity to say that the complaint would contain the name of the child and be brought by the mother for the child if the child was not there.
Ms. Quinn, can you help me out with something? One of the bases you argued before, or your client argued before the IJ, was that this individual was guilty of child abuse. As I understand it, he never appealed that issue to the board. Am I correct?
Yeah, well, I think he did, Your Honor. I think he said he was not. I think the basis of his appeal was that the target of the solicitation was an adult. And maybe I'm misunderstanding your question.
I don't think so. I think it seems to me that he didn't appeal that to the board. If he didn't appeal it to the board, I don't know why you're not relying on it here as an independent basis.
We are relying on that as a basis for his adjustment of status claim. We believe that he did not raise that to the board. He merely argued to the board that the immigration judge abused his discretion, that he was arbitrary, and he asked for the case to be remanded for reconsideration. But at no point did he argue to the board that he was entitled to a hearing. And if he had, at that point, the board could have addressed the question and it could have remanded it to the immigration judge had the board felt that that was the proper solution. But the petitioner never did that.
I follow you on that. It just seems to me that he really never presented to the board any challenge to the IJ's view that he committed the offense of child abuse and was therefore removable. If that's right, then
That is correct, Your Honor, then yes, we would stand on exhaustion of remedies.
That was my point. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. If there are any questions as to whether there is an issue as a matter of law on the adjustment status, I think Your Honors have already stole my thunder there. I think that the record is very clear in the transcript at where the judge said to Mr. Shershidze, and Mr. Shershidze replied both in English and Russian that he understood, the court said to him, "I will bring everyone back to issue a decision on whether or not you are subject to removal and eligible for relief. And I hope to do that shortly within the next 2 weeks. Do you understand, sir?" And he replied, "Yes," both in English and Russian. The record is replete from the administrative record of 112 to approximately 117 of the judge asking petitioner, "Do you want to make any more arguments? Do you want to make any more oral arguments? Do you want to make any more written arguments? And is there any other form of relief that you want?" And petitioner's counsel said, "No, the only form that we would choose is adjustment of status." And the record went forth on those grounds. So we would assert that the adjustment of status, which is raised as a due process issue, is merely an abuse of discretion issue clothed in constitutional garments. He really has only attacked the discretion of the judge, not due process. Okay. If there are any other questions, if not, I see that I actually still have time, surprisingly.
Well, you're not mandated to use it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Quinn. Ms. Baldini, Perterman, your time had expired, but you may have another minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would just like to point the court to Administrative Record, page 118, and it says here by the judge, the first thing I need to do is make a decision as whether or not you are subject to being removed from the U.S., and if so, whether you're eligible for any relief to let you stay in the United States. We submit to the court that the judge clearly indicated that this was going to be a bifurcated hearing process. He was going to first rule on whether he was deportable and then decide whether he was eligible for relief. And so we submit that the judge erred by not allowing him to have an evidentiary hearing on the issue of whether he deserved adjustment of status and whether or not his asylum should be granted. I'm sorry, his adjustment should be granted or his asylum status terminated. Thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks to all counsel, and the case is taken under advisement.